fluffy bread,
classic burger buns,
and so many carbs.
Carb fear is real. But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
However, standing by right now is the one and the only, Sean Mooney.
Who?
Mooney, everybody's got a price for the $1 million man.
After you threw him off through the announce table, Taker climbs back down, he gets in the ring, and he goes, see if he's breathing.
So right before I called 911, I thought she'd fallen asleep. Kind of shook her a little bit to wake her up, and she did not respond.
And I'll go down to my grave, testifying or whatever, swearing that Davey was not on drugs. If he was on drugs, the way Brett says, how great does that make Davey?
Are you laughing, Sean?
I get off the track here all the time.
Did you just laugh, Sean?
If they would do a movie about your life, who would you want to play your part?
Well, George Clooney, of course. Who else could it be?
Attention, Sean Mooney, you scum, you slime, you maggot. If there's no further questions, you're dismissed. Carry on, maggot.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Primetime with Sean Mooney. Man, do we have a lot going on with PTSM. We have now added another episode every week. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. I hope you've all had a tremendous week, coming off a very special episode. Content I wasn't even aware we had. I didn't. As you know, maybe some of you don't, but I was a part of StarCast 2. And at that tremendous event in Las Vegas, I did a lot of hosting for many of the shows that appeared at that event on Fight TV. I also had the great fortune of hosting a great event there featuring one of my all-time favorite superstars, Bret the Hitman Hart. Now, the show was called Sharpshooter, Bret Hart in his own words. And during our time together, we got to discuss a lot of topics and answered a lot of questions that I had always wanted to ask Bret. It had been decades since we'd seen each other. And on top of it all, Conrad Thompson, who put StarCast together and this show that we did, also persuaded Tom McGee, remember him, to come to Vegas and be on stage with us to talk about the tryout match with Bret Hart that launched him into the WWF. So it was just an awesome afternoon. Well, those great folks at Fight TV, and please, they have so many great events out there. When you want to see a great fight, or you know they do a lot of MMA, and also they do you know a lot of other events. You got to check them out, Mike Weber and that group. Well, they allowed us to use the audio, and we put that up last week and got a tremendous response to it. I'm really glad that so many people enjoyed it. If you didn't catch it, be sure to check it out. The big announcement this week, I mentioned as we started this podcast, you asked for it, you got it, more old school. And we have added a new podcast every week. It started this past Monday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. And we call them the Network Classics PTSM, Network Classics PTSM. And every week we're going to be featuring episodes from Saturday Night's Main Event, Primetime Wrestling, Tuesday Night Titans, Superstars, and of course, Raw. And what we do is we play this. We did the first episode of Saturday Night's Main Event this past week, the number one episode for that great series that ran for so many years. It was so much fun. And I do commentary along with them. So I talk about some of the stories behind the scenes and some of the other things that I knew were going on. I talk about who, the announcers. I mean, I just have a blast with it. and you can listen to it whenever you want. You just match it up. I tell you here, press play, and off we go. So check it out. Those every Monday now, we're going to be having those network classics, we're calling them. And the next one will drop again next Monday, 6 a.m. Eastern time. Okay? Known around the world as the homicidal, suicidal, genocidal, death-defying maniac, Sabu. Sabu, welcome to Primetime. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm pretty good.
Hey, where did that nickname come from? Where the homicidal, suicidal, where did that all come from?
Paul Hannon came up with that. I don't like using it so much because it sounds like I'm bragging or something. I don't mind if someone else says it, but yeah. I don't say it myself. But Paul Hannon came up with that.
Well, I tell you, you know, when you would look at your performances, though, they were just so much different than anything else anybody was doing at the time to that extreme. And, you know, you think about that time, Sabu, that they had, you know, there were brawlers out there. There was hardcore, but nothing like what you would do with it. But what was the difference back then? And I know that the original Sheik was one of the, you know, the forefathers of that. But what was the difference to you between, you know, these brawlers that would go out there and, you know, work pretty stiff and hardcore?
Well, you know, but brawlers were guys who weren't technical wrestlers. They were guys who were kickers and punchers and stiff. Yeah. So I just made the brawler athletic, you know, with kicking and punching to another level, you know.
Yeah.
So, everything I did kind of rough, you know, like my moonsaults are crooked and all that's kind of rough. So it looks a little more good. But I think it looks better than a smooth moonsault, you know.
Yeah.
Or smooth moonsault.
But when you were growing up and seeing this, I don't know if you thought maybe, you know, you could do it better or you had other ideas on where you could take it from there. But it was...
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but I'd say was it, you know, to some people who really don't understand the art of it. I mean, there really is something to that. And did you recognize it back then when you were a young kid?
Of course I wanted to be a wrestler, and I was scared of my uncle, but I was scared to be like him also, you know, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Then when I started wrestling, he goes, you can't be like me. So my first 5 years, I didn't even jump off the top rope and I didn't bite anybody. I didn't bleed. I didn't even go out of the ring. It was all in the ring stuff, boring stuff that first matches do. And then, I used to have these crazy moves in my mind, what I used to do in the backyard, because we had a ring in the backyard, and I thought nobody was watching. And then when we were in Japan, I go, Sheik, what should I do? Because I never did any moonsaults or that in a match. And he goes, do what you do when you think I'm not watching. I go, what do you mean? He goes, when you're in the backyard, you think I'm not watching, I'm watching you. I'll do those things. I said, all right. And so I did, and it got over the first night, and I did a new thing every night. And then everybody thought I was a flying magician.
Okay, so and now that you mentioned your uncle, and I'm sure a lot of people don't know the history that your uncle, the original Sheik Ed Farhat, was your uncle, as you mentioned. And what was it like for you as a kid growing up and, you know, being around him? And how did that relationship develop where you eventually got into wrestling?
Well, it's in the book, but I could tell you anyways, but I have a book that came out too also.
Yes.
But growing up, you know, I stared at him and just kind of wanted to be like him, right?
Yeah.
You know, I never talked to him. I was going to talk to him. He always told me what to do, but I never say anything back. And then when I got shot in the face when I was 19, but I wanted to be a wrestler my whole life. So when I was amateur wrestling in school, it wasn't even to be a better amateur wrestler. It was preparing me to be a pro wrestler when I turned 18.
Yeah.
It wasn't even to be a better amateur wrestler, to be a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
It was just a warm-up for it. So when I turned, when I got 19, I got shot. So I figured if I'm going to do this, I better do it before I get shot again. Or, you know. So 2 weeks after I got shot, I went out and seen him. And it took off from there. He became my mentor, and I never left his side for 20 years.
Yeah, and you mentioned that book, Sabu, Scars, Silence, and Super Glue. It is an incredible book.
That's close enough.
Huh?
That's close enough. It's Silence, Scars, and Super Glue, yeah.
Well, it is. It's a great book. How, and we'll mention this again, but how can folks get it? It's still out there through...
You can get it on Kindle, or you can get it on... What was that, Melissa? Hold on, this is Super Jimmy.
Okay.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, Sabu's got that. I am great. I hope you're doing well, too. The best way to get it, where you're, like, personally getting it right from Sabu and me, it's ordered off ecwsabu.com. So ecwsabu.com. And then you get a signed, personalized copy from him, and I do a lot of his mail. We just moved, so we don't really have a good assistant yet where we are. So we do, I handle his mail for him, but ecwsabu.com. The $35 personalized copy is the best one to pick up.
Fantastic.
Yeah, or on Kindle, if you just want to get it over the internet or whatever.
Yeah, Kindle too? Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so getting back to...
I prefer to order it from Kindle, that way I don't have to mess with it.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that again before we wrap up our conversation, but I wanted to kind of go through, you mentioned getting shot. I mean, there's a lot to that story right there, but growing up, and were you an athlete?
Me and my brother, I had three brothers and three sisters, and my three brothers are just 1 year and 2 years older than me, or 2 years and 3 years older than me.
Yeah.
So we played baseball, football, whatever season it was, we had uniforms and we played it, you know, every year until like sixth grade or something. Then we started playing real football, you know.
Yeah. So was that your sport? I mean, were you you like football?
Everything was our sport. So baseball, football, but not wrestling. Only wrestling was my sport. My brothers didn't like wrestling. But yeah. We were all baseball, football players forever. And in high school, junior high and high school, you know, but I was a wrestler. They were never a wrestler. They were beating me up my whole life, but they didn't wrestle me.
So were you points in your life thinking, you know, that I might be able to play some kind of professional sports? Was that?
Yeah. No. Everything was to gear me to be a wrestler. Football, baseball.
Really?
I took all that, and I'm not kidding. When I was doing it, I was saying, this is going to make you a better wrestler. This is going to make you a better wrestler. So I lift weight to be a better wrestler. I eat steak to be a better wrestler. I played baseball to be a better wrestler. Huh. Whatever it took, whatever I did was to hone me to be a wrestler.
So you said you had a ring in the backyard, though. Is that, you know, something that your brothers and you guys were all into?
No, the backyard was my uncle's backyard. Okay. He always had a ring. But I never got into it until I was 19. I was never allowed in there. I could look at it and all that and hit the canvas, but I could never, you know, hit the apron with my hands when I was little. But he never let us in the ring. I couldn't get into it until I was 19. But when I went out to go get trained by him, I moved out into his house, and it was 7 months until I got in that ring. I had to chop wood and be his slave for 7 months and not say, hey, when can I get in the ring? He never ask anything, just do what I say. And for 7 months, I didn't see her. I couldn't even get in the ring. I seen the ring. I never got in the ring.
Did he want to see how bad you wanted it? Was that his process?
And how disciplined. Wanted to see how bad I wanted it and how disciplined I was.
Wow. So before we get into
that. Whatever I did wrong, he'd correct me, and I never did it wrong again. Never. Whatever he corrected me on, I never did it wrong again.
Was he always this mysterious figure growing up? Like you said, he didn't talk to you much? You were afraid to talk to him?
Yeah, I'd watch him talk to other people, and he laughed and joked and all that.
Yeah.
But I was so young that, you know, he wasn't a buddy of mine. He was my uncle and a giant man, you know, a star.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I seen him on TV. He was giant, unbelievable. And so I was afraid to talk to him, but I would always stare at him. He had said, I knew you would come out and see me. How would you know that? I go, how would you know that? He goes, because you stared at me your whole life.
Yeah. Wow. And who were some of the other, I mean, I don't know how much you were exposed to as far as other professional territories in Lansing, Michigan, but who were some of the other
There was none in Michigan. I didn't wrestle in Michigan until probably 9 years into my career.
Yeah.
Michigan, Detroit, I'm at Lansing. I didn't wrestle in Lansing until probably 9 or 10 years into my career. I wrestled in Detroit a lot, but my mother's never seen me wrestle.
Yeah, but I mean, what about growing up though? What did you follow when you were growing up?
What wrestling did I follow?
Yeah, what were you able to see there?
that big time wrestling. That was the only wrestling that I knew of. I didn't even know there was any other wrestling growing up. I only thought big time wrestling was the wrestling that was the companies. What company?
So when your uncle started training,
what's that?
I said. So when your uncle started training you, was it pretty much just basic wrestling? It wasn't. He wasn't training. Was he training you to be a hardcore, or was it no? You got to learn the basics.
No. I didn't have a cage match for 5 or 6 years. I didn't have a hardcore match until I went to Japan 7 years. Wow. I never had a barbed wire match until 7 years. All this stuff gradually evolved. You never have that stuff. You never say, I'm going to practice for a barbed wire match when you're green. You're going to practice for the first match if you're lucky.
Yeah.
You know, and hardcore stuff, when anybody trains with me, we don't bash each other with chairs. I hand-to-hand wrestle them. Then when they're good at that, then I bash them with a chair.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I used to have guys come to my house thinking we're going to do backflips all day. We didn't do one backflip all week.
Really?
I taught them how to lock up, how to headlock, and how to iron bar, and how to iron drag, and all the stuff that everybody thinks is boring, but you got to be good at.
Yeah.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So before we really get into it, and it obviously had a big impact in your life, how did you get shot?
I was at a party for a friend of mine, and these guys from across the street came over and caused some trouble.
Yeah.
So out of the corner of my eye, I seen this dude pull out two guns. It looked like out of his socks, but it wasn't out of his socks. He pulled them out. He was low with them and pulled them out. He had two guns in his hand. And this is out of the corner of my eye. He was shooting my friend in the stomach. Bam, 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 bam. Then he took off running, so I ran after him. And while he's running, he's shooting behind him. But I caught him and threw him down. And during the tumble, he pushed the gun against my face and shot me.
Oy.
You know, there was no closer than point blank you could get. It was right against my face. And shot me, you know, in my cheek, kind of. That was that.
So it was just like a clean in-out wound? You didn't suffer any...
It was a clean, dirty in wound. I had powder burns all down my throat, pellets down in the back of my throat. When the bullet hit my teeth, it shattered and went to my nasal cavity in the back of my throat. So I actually got shot in my throat. And and the powder burns killed me. I couldn't breathe I was coughing for weeks. It burned my lungs. The powder flash went down my throat. Mm.
Wow.
But anyways, I survived it, and nothing else was hurt as much.
No, but obviously I know you were blessed that to have something like that happen. And how did that change your life to, you know, you getting into what you ended up doing for a living?
Well, at the time, you know, I was really wild. I just got out of high school, you know, a year before that.
Yeah.
And so I was still partying, jamming and stuff. And when I got shot, that's when I stopped partying and jamming. And started lifting weights and eating right and training. And then, like I said, 2 weeks out of the hospital, I went and see my uncle, and I didn't look back.
Wow. So Tell me about the early years, though, of training. I mean, it sounded like it took a while. He wasn't going to let you go out there and perform professionally.
I trained 2 years. Wow. I trained 2 years. I didn't have my first match till I was 21. I trained 2 years, and then I wrestled 5 years, you know, just hand-to-hand wrestling, no high spots. The only high spot I would do would be a drop kick.
Wow.
You know, it was all boring stuff. But anyway, the stuff that you have to learn to be a great wrestler, you have to know this stuff. You can be a good wrestler without it, but if you know that stuff, you could be a great wrestler.
Yeah, and someday I will. What was the territory? Because a lot of people don't know about the territories back then. That you would work in an area, and then
when I started, it wasn't really a territory. It was a spot shows. My uncle ran a little bit, but it was mostly the spot shows in Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan, and that was in Windsor and Ontario. It was the spot shows. And my first territory sort of would be, Dave the Bear Man in Ontario. Every summer I'd go up there and wrestle for 2-3 months. And there was no really territories anymore. This is when Vince was taken over. The territories were dead then.
Really? Even then, huh? It was, the independent world was really...
It was terrible. Yeah, I didn't know the difference between independent and anything else. I thought everybody was independent.
Yeah.
Vince killed everything,
So what really...
But he also killed the territories, but he made more money than ever for the wrestlers. The wrestlers now are the highest paid ever, ever. I mean, Dad didn't make money like that. My uncle didn't make money like that.
Yeah. Well, and I guess everybody has a lot to thank him for. But at the time, it was, because I came in, I started working for the WWF in 88, and that was when, the world had really changed because they had, WrestleMania 1 in 85, but those early, early 80s is when it really completely changed, But as we look back, look what it did for the business. I mean, there's a...
it's unbelievable.
Realize that. What was the? Go ahead, Sabu.
That's all good. No, no big deal. Go ahead.
What was the? I don't know if you call it your first big break, but was it when? Was it going to Japan that really changed your life as far as professionally?
Yeah. The first 5 years, I made less than $100 a match. I made for lucky 25 or 50 a match. After 5 years, I started making $100 a match. So I made $100 a match until 7 years. So I went to Japan. After I went to Japan, I made a living. So my break with Japan, I didn't make a living until until I went to Japan, 7 years into my career, 9 years into my training,
and
15 years into my
wrestling. And what was wrestling like at that time in Japan? Because other people have been guests on here.
It was just starting to get Onita's company was just starting out to be hardcore. It was different, and it wasn't called hardcore. It was just called Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, where he called it martial arts wrestling because we'd fight, karate guys in a barbed wire match or something. So it was funny. But some of the guys, they couldn't work, But anyways, the wrestling in Japan, there was Baba and Inoki, their companies, and that was like that. That was the top dollar ones, and then the lesser companies was FMW, IWA, and a few other ones, and Wing. And so I went to FMW where they say no one made money, but I made money. They paid my uncle very good, and they paid me pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And that changed. When I came over, I changed the pay scale. Pay scale for independent guys, so they had to up everybody else's money.
And why was that? I mean, because you were that good?
Not in the beginning. Yes, I mean, I got a decent payoff before I got to Japan because of my uncle. Then I got more because I was that good. I'm not trying to say that I was that good, but I'm just saying what you said. They paid me more because they liked me.
Yeah. Well, and was it as crazy over there as far as, those matches were basically shoot matches, a lot of them, right? That they, had to.
Yeah, they were half shoots, of course the finish was the work, but they were half shoots where there was very stiff, the chair shots and everything was, because they weren't good at, the guys he would use, the green guys and the American guys he would use, they weren't very good, but they could bash the shit out of each other. Like Mike Awesome, in the beginning, he wasn't very good, and Horace Boulder, they weren't very good, but they could bash the shit out of each other.
But that isn't
and not bitch about it.
Yeah, but that's what they expected too, right? When you went in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, did you ever really get hurt doing those matches because of not only what they expected, but like you said, some of these guys weren't as talented and as skilled at doing, you know, these matches?
Yeah, you know, you're getting a concussion almost every night. Every other couple of nights you get knocked out, or stitches in the back of your head, because we cut our heads every night, but the chair is most of the back of our heads open on, you know, and just about every other chair shot there. So stiff, even if you blocked them, they fling the chair, and Japanese chairs were so heavy and they fling them so hard that even if you blocked them, they'd knock the shit out of you.
So is this at this point where you started to embrace hardcore more, learn more techniques?
I was taking what they're doing to an athletic level. Like I could hit you with a chair, but I'd throw it to make it look better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or I could sit in a chair, but I'd jump off it to make it look better. So whatever they did, I wasn't trying to degrade what they did. I was just trying to make my own style. I wasn't trying to say in my head my own style. I'm just going to do it. I was thinking it was my way. I'm going to do it my way. He said, hit him with a chair, I'm going to throw it. He said, do that, I'll jump off it. Or he does that, I'll flip. Or you know, something like that. If they go, can you do a run-in? Yeah. So I would do a different kind of run-in. I'd run, jump off the chair, apron, get in the ring, something like that. You know, now I can't do it. There's camera people in the way and fans. I can't do it. But anyways, anything they wanted me to do, anything they did, I just changed it into an athletic movement. Hardcore wasn't just punching and kicking each other. It was poetic.
Yeah. No, like I said, it's an art. I mean, to be able to do those moves, and I don't know, were you always that athletic? Did you have that, you know, that type of skill when you were younger?
Yeah, you know, not wrestling athletic, but yeah, you know, Matt, you know, everything I did, you know, play football and all that, I pretty much stood out. I didn't excel at anything because, like I said, it was all practice to be a wrestler. I didn't take anything that serious. And when they say, hey, you know, you're in the All-Star game, I go, oh, yeah, but I'm busy. You know, that was a day off, you know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't that good, but it didn't matter to me how good I was. It was all to hone me to be better later.
Yeah, but Sabu, you look at it, and you know, and I've watched a bunch of these old matches with you, and if you really look at it for what you're doing, and it's for somebody looking at it, it's just like this mass chaos, but it's not. And there's like, you know, like gymnastic moves, and there's almost like you're like a diver in some sort, that everything has to be exact. And I just couldn't help but wonder, like, how did you work that out? Because you have to have somebody else who's able to do that with you to pull it off. So,
it was first done in Japan. You know, of course the Japanese would do anything I wanted. And after I figured out what I was doing, because I was making it up as I was going along, after I figured out what I was doing next time, the guys were easy to do. Now in the States, they were stubborn. So I'd be doing moonsaults to the floor and they'd move. The only one that would stand there would be Terry Funk. Anything I said, catch me. He goes, what? I'd do for a flip on him. He'd catch me. Then he goes, catch me. Then he'd kind of, he didn't do a flip, but he'd do a dive, his type of dive on me, and I'd catch him. And then when people started seeing him doing that, they started saying, hey, well, I could take that.
But
when I used to put a guy through the table in the very beginning in the States, I'd pay him an extra $100 if he would sell it to the hotel and tell people that it was stiff. Because after I put him to a table, they go, hey, that wasn't nothing. I go, yeah, but don't tell anybody. You know, otherwise, everybody will do it.
Yeah,
then everybody started doing it.
And it sure looked like it. And how did you bring that in? Where did the because nobody mastered that better than you.
Well, like I said, in Japan, they were doing power drivers to the table. So I took it to another level by doing a moonsault to the table.
Yeah.
One day, Malco, we did a match, and one day Malco said, get back in the ring and get your heat. I go, what do you want me to do? He goes, I don't know, think of something. I go, well, how about I moonsault a table? He goes, what's that? I go, I'll show you. I threw a table in the ring, and I moonsault a moonsault to the table, and boom, the people went nuts. So the next night, I put a guy on the table, and they went nuts there, and then it went off from there.
Wow. I'm telling you, you look back at that stuff, and now it's commonplace. You know, they do it all the time.
Yeah, like a headlock.
But back then, you must have brought the house down when you started, when that was something that you did. Was it, was that the reaction when you brought it to the States?
Yeah. When I brought it to the States, the first time I did the stuff was in Philadelphia, and those fans knew who I was already, because they had the seats. So those fans, a hardcore fan isn't a fan that knows everything. A hardcore fan is a fan that will go watch any wrestling. And at the time, Philadelphia was the shit. They had big names, but the matches were really bad. Yeah. And the TV was really bad. That hardcore to me was the bad TV and the bad matches. You know, these guys weren't very good, but the people still wanted to see them because they'll watch anybody. Yeah. So when I came in and did my stuff, they go, wow, we're not watching just anybody. We're watching somebody special.
Yeah. And
after that, Paul would bring in somebody special, you know.
Did you feel you had to keep raising the bar?
Yes and no. I didn't raise the bar because I was the bar. So I just kept trying to impress myself.
Right.
But
then you have, what comes with that, though. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I said, but what
comes. I'm sorry again. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that what comes with that is that, you know, people want to do it as well. So they're kind of chasing you. I mean, is that the way you felt? Because then you would have to, okay, everybody's doing it. Everybody's bringing a table out.
Yeah, I was very mad in the beginning when other people broke tables because they would do it. Probably would have other guys, Public Enemy, break a table when I wasn't there. And I go, hey, did anybody break a table? He goes, no. And I go, well, I've seen the TV from last week. Okay, someone broke a table. He goes, well, we didn't emphasize it. I said, you just fucking, nobody broke a table. They said, nobody seen it.
Yeah.
But anyways, and then, so I didn't mind so much because they did it badly. They didn't do it like I did it. You know, I did a couple of freezes. I did a thing, and then boom, you know, and they would just go boom, you know. And they got a great reaction because the people just wanted to see anything. Like I said, hardcore fans are happy to see anything.
Yeah.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But some of these things you came up with, and I don't know the truth to the legend of this, but of course that story is out there about that the match with the Sheik in 92 with the ropes that were with barbed wire, and they had gas-soaked rags on them or something. Was that, what is the truth to that legend?
Well, it happened, but it wasn't very good. They go up to the end of the tournament, a fire match. I said, oh, what's that? They go, you'll see. And then they showed me a diagram of it, and it was 8-foot 2x4s wrapped in bed sheets soaked in kerosene for like a week. And they had two on the top, one in the middle, and two on the bottom. So there's five on each side. That was the diagram. At the last minute, I go, don't put the bottom ones on. They go, how are we going to get out? They go, jump over. I go, no, my uncle can't jump over, so don't put the bottom ones on. They go, okay, we won't put the bottom ones on one side. So they didn't put the bottom ones on one side. So they go, after about 10 to 15 minutes, wait for the fire to go down and then do a high spot. I said, okay, we get in the match. 2 minutes in the match, we're all crowded in the middle saying it's too hot. And we only went about 6 minutes, I think. And then, so I went out and jumped out of the ring first and grabbed the bucket. and threw it behind me because I figured my uncle was behind me. But he went out the other side where he did get through it, and it burned the shit out of his back.
Really?
Like, he was in the hospital. He was in the hospital a couple of weeks, and he held it for about 6 months.
Yeah. Well, not all of them work, right? Jeez.
And they couldn't put it. They couldn't put it out, and the ring burned till like morning, till the next day.
Jeez. That's amazing. Most remember you from ECW, and that is where much of the legend about you derives. What was the ECW at the time when you arrived there? And I think it was in 93. I hope I'm correct there. But
it was in 93, yes.
Yeah.
I think so, yes. It was just a bunch of guys that weren't that good, you know, like, nothing against him, man, but he knows he's not that good, a technical wrestler, but he tried to be one. He was a surfer with white stuff on his nose. Sandman was supposed to be Sandman the Surfer, not Sandman the Nightmare.
Yeah.
When I got there, I go, man, these guys are terrible. So I go, I'm just going to do my regular match. So I did my regular match with Taz, but which was extreme to anybody else, and they went nuts. Taz was the right opponent for me. And because he wrestled real hard, and stiff, he wanted to prove something to me. Because he thought I was stiff, but I just look stiff. I'm not stiff. If anybody, when they wrestle me, they go, wow, you're a lot smoother than I thought. I go, yeah, you're supposed to look rough.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Good. The game is to look rough.
Yeah, I mean, you had to pay people to tell them that you were, just with the tables.
Yeah, right? I had to pay them to tell my freedom.
That you were stiff. Was it this... a collection of, I don't know, I mean, I guess they like to think of themselves as Rebel, but it was kind of Rebels, they were kind of the anti-WWF, I guess, at the time. Did you guys kind of look at it that way, that you were just doing what you wanted to do and didn't want anybody telling you how to do it?
Yeah, after I came in and got over it, it changed slowly into extreme. That wasn't the vision. The vision... And Paul took over the same day I came in, so he let the guys do pretty much what they wanted to do, and that's, you know, that's great, except for sometimes you can't let guys do what they want to do if they're not good at it. But the people appreciate it, so they would do what they did, and they weren't good at it, but they were killing each other. So it got over, and then eventually we'll call it hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, we never knew what hardcore was at the time. They just thought it was brawling.
But to you, was it always... I guess in a sense, art. I mean, you always were, you know, prepared to make sure that no one got hurt, and whatever you did, to whatever your high spot was going to be, you prepared for it, and wanted that person who's going to do it with you.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff would be stay or move, and so the guys would move.
Yeah.
You know, so but that's the move in or the flip in or whatever it is. But I forgot what the question is.
Well, I'm saying that, you know, the way, if you were watching it back then, and it was just, people thought it was just chaos, that nobody really, you know, they just did these crazy things. But I know, I've heard you talk before that it wasn't that way with you. You made sure that you were prepared, knew what you were doing, knew what that other person who was going to be in that ring was you, was going to be protected. I mean, was that always your philosophy?
I never did a crazy move that I haven't already did in practice probably 20 times or more.
Yeah.
You know, everything I did in practice. I had a ring to practice, and my uncle goes, you can't do that with somebody. I go, okay, well, why not? He goes, it's too stiff. I go, you're right. So I'd make whatever I did unstiff, only stiff to myself. So I took most of the pounding. I took all the pounding. I took 95% of the pounding more than my opponent.
Yeah. And how much of a toll did it take on your body?
What's that?
I said, how much of a toll did it take on your body, even early on?
Yeah. Early on, it didn't bother me. You know,
really?
Now it bothers me, but it didn't bother me. That's why I'm so fucked up now, is because I didn't get surgery when I should have, because I could overcome it with pain pills or just stubbornness, because I didn't want to take any time off. I never took any time off. The only time I took time off was when I caught an infection. And I had to take a whole year off. I couldn't walk for a few months. But anyways, that's the only time I really took any time off. I never intentionally said, hey, I'm going to take some time off. It's just, there'd be spells where I didn't work for a couple of weeks, but I never took time off. Even now, I work almost every week.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know how you keep doing it. It's
and if the price is right and the people are there, I'll bust my ass.
Yeah.
You know? I bust my ass anyways, but really bust my ass when people are there.
Yeah, so tell me more below about the ECW and what that atmosphere was like, and some of the people that were there with you that you saw coming up and who became big stars, too.
Well, ECW was electric to me. Whenever I come out, you could feel the cheering. Before I'd go out, you could, like, they'd chant my name all through the show. You could feel them. They vibrated the building. That was awesome. And then, you know, what else was the question? Well, that smoking weed.
Yeah, but what was it about the ECW that was so different than these, you know, the other groups? Because
because no one censored us. We didn't have no censor. Paul Lee was our age. He was in the same hip crowd as MTV,
yeah.
You know, and it was MTV age. We got to do what we wanted, and there was no censor. I got to do what I wanted. That's how I got to be so, not poetic, but got to tell my story my way. Is Paul Lee let me do it that way. So did Japan. They let me do whatever I wanted also, yeah. Within reason. Paul Lee let me do anything I wanted without reason. I could do anything I wanted.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why people appreciated it.
Yeah, that's where I give Paul credit for that. You know, that's how you find out who. If you want an artist to be an artist, you let him be an artist. You don't tell him what to do. You let him be an artist.
Yeah. Well, and it seems that element is missing, I think, somewhat from today's product. I don't know what your feeling is on it, but I think that anytime you're trying to tell people how to perform, it's not a good idea.
But now they have a blueprint. There was no blueprint. The blueprint you make up, you go along, you make the blueprint as you go along. Now there's a blueprint where here's the promo station, here's the tumbling station, here's the top rope station. Like, they all go through these steps that weren't there before, you know? You know, everybody's taught different, and they're taught to be like actors, you know? Got to get your character down in this before they have a match. No, you don't. You got to learn how to headlock before you get your character down.
Yeah. Well, and I know, I don't think it was too far from this. Like a year later, I mean, I think the WWF came calling. But was there a loyalty to ECW, or did you like the freedom? What was it that, I think you basically turned them down, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, that was in 94. Yeah, it was loyalty to Paul Heyman. It wasn't even loyalty to ECW, it was loyalty to Paul, because Paul, he got me. Well, he goes, I got to tell you something before your match. I go, what? He goes, do something amazing. I go, oh, okay. That's the only advice he'd give me. So for him to say that was the most, that was great. You know, he knows I was going to do something amazing, you know.
So did you fear that being with the WWF, they would stifle that? They would try and control you?
When I talked to Vince, he said, you know, they wanted to tone my style down and modify my look and have the Iron Sheik as my uncle. And I go, no way I can do that.
The
Sheik thing wasn't a deal breaker, but the change my look was a deal breaker, modify my look was a deal breaker. But when he carried on, he said, the Iron Sheik was my uncle. I said, no way. Like, I giggled when he said that. I said, no way. And like, he was dead serious. I thought he was joking. But anyways, later on, I see a character came out that's called the Sultan. And the Iron Sheik was his mentor, uncle. But they offered me good money. And I go, no. And Vince goes, how can you turn us down for a company that might not even be there tomorrow? I said, I don't know, because maybe it will be here tomorrow. And then he goes, well, when you're ready, come back. Mm-hmm. And then when I come back, it wasn't as quite as friendly. But
yeah. So what was it about the ECW, though, what was its demise? Was it just mismanaged? Because it always had a popular product.
That's what I'd also add to that. It would have broke my uncle's heart if I would have took on the Iron Sheik as my uncle. Yeah. Even if it was a work, it would have broke his heart. But anyway, I'm sorry. What was that? What was the question?
I'd say that you did have this loyalty to Heyman or the ECW, and it did have a very popular product. It was a great alternative to what they were putting out. But what was its demise? Was it just badly managed?
We were getting too small for our bitches. Like, we had all these big shows all around the country, and we couldn't fill the fucking arenas. You know, the only time we do good is during a pay-per-view. And that was only in the arenas we did good. Our buy rates were terrible, you know, because we would have been good by now, maybe, you know. But the demise was we got too small for our britches. Our name was bigger than we were, you know.
Yeah. Well,
we had the money to share it, you know.
Yeah. Now, when you would eventually show up in the WWF, but you never spoke really before that time. Why not? Because you could cut a promo. So what was it?
I can't cut a promo unless they just say slap me in the mouth and like, hey mother, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Because I can't read a lot. They gave me lines a script. And there were words I would never say in a million years. And I go, I would never say these words. They go, but you're going to now. I go, no, I can't. When I was a kid, me and my mom was watching wrestling. And we seen somebody come on the TV and go, blah, blah, blah. And in 5 minutes a week, somebody else do the same, almost same thing, different words, different guy, but almost the same thing. Blah, blah. And she goes, promise me. When you grow up, you'll never do that. I go, Mom, I'll never say a word. And then this was like when I was 10 or 12 years old. And then when I got to be a wrestler, now I don't talk because I don't talk because I'm shy. But, and also, I told my mother I never would.
Really?
Yeah. She goes, tell me you'll never embarrass me like that. I go, I'll never say a word.
But if somebody didn't hand you lines, like say this, could you do it? I mean, just top of mind, you know, because you knew that character?
Not a Sabu, I don't think I could. But like if I was acting in another role, sort of, or something, I don't know. Yeah, I probably could, you know, if the price is right. But, you know, they don't want to pay me extra for it, so why would I want to do it now? I even said to Vince that you're not paying me enough to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And he just raised an eyebrow. He didn't say nothing. I thought he was going to say, well, how much do you want? then we're talking. So. But they wanted me to do extra work and destroy my character by go against my best judgment and make me talk. My best judgment was saying I'm going to hurt myself if I talk, and I was right. You know, people, man, I heard you talk. Now I know you're human.
Yeah.
You know, before that, I didn't want the people who didn't know me know that I wasn't a monster.
Yeah. So do you? Feel, I mean, it seems to me you always said you were always pretty straight shooter as far as talking to tell. Do you think that held you back with a company like the WWF because
sure
it couldn't be any other way?
Yeah, I'm sure it did. But I thought I could get them to see my way.
Yeah.
When I go, I can't talk, get me someone to talk for me, they go, Umaga already has that gimmick. I said, I was doing it before Umaga was born. But that's okay. You know, I said, what the fuck? You know, but it held me back. Sure it did. Part of the gimmicks of wrestling now, category, all the things they look at is promos, this, that, that thing. Before, when I was coming up, they go, he can't talk. Okay, don't have him talk. We're going to give him a gimmick where he doesn't talk.
Yeah.
You know, or we're going to give him a guy where someone talks for him. They didn't make him talk if he couldn't talk. So now they make you talk. They go against my best judgment. So I was very... It was against my best judgment, and they weren't paying me enough.
Yeah.
If they would have showered me with money, I would have got over that best judgment shit.
Yeah, yeah. that always works, right? What was it though that you finally said I that you'd had enough with ECW after all that loyalty and you know, commitment to that group? What was it that finally did it in '95?
Brother, I went 6 or 8 months with pay-per-view checks bouncing. I went 2 months with no pay, with a bank account in England. I didn't realize it until about 6 weeks. I go, man, none of these checks are going through. Mm-hmm. I have no money in the bank. So 8 weeks into it, I got a secret meeting with Kevin Sullivan and J.J. Dillon, and they offered me money, more money than I could count. And before I got home... before I signed the contract, I called my mother to tell her about it. And she had a heart attack on the phone before I could tell her because something was going on at home and she panicked and had a heart attack. So I didn't tell her.
Huh.
So I didn't sign the autograph. I didn't sign the contract, and I flew home. And She was in intensive care. So I called Kevin Sullivan and said, hey, I'm going to fax over the contract now, signed. Okay? And he goes, no, too late. We're already being sued by Carl Haven. And all it was a threat of a suit. It was a method to drop it. And I would have been still rich right now if they would have came through with it.
Oh, man. So what, in the meantime, so you, instead of going to WCW, you went to New Japan?
Yeah, well, no, I went everywhere else. But I went to All Japan, actually. I went everywhere else, and I still made money, but yeah. I didn't make the money I was going to make in WCW. They went out of business a year later. They lost $60 million that year. It could have been $61 million. What's wrong with that, you know?
That's right. You could have had one of them.
Yeah, and they wanted me to the top spot to run with it. They were going to give me the big push because he was. And we even had someone talk for me. Somebody of my choice talk for me.
Oh, yeah.
They're sucking my dick big time.
Yeah,
and then I was blowing my load in my pants. So I said, I have to go sign this. I have to go read this in my room. And Kevin goes, read it. Just sign it. I said, just give me a few minutes. And so I went to my room and disappeared. They go, what the fuck?
Wow.
But Paul, yeah, you thought I just died or something.
Did you ever remind Paul of that? That he cost you a lot of money?
No, he knows he did. Yeah. He knows.
Yeah.
And the thing was, I was just going to go to WCW for a year or two and then come back to ECW, a bigger name. But hopefully that was my plan. I had no real ill intentions against ECW. I just said I wanted to get paid. I was too old to take promises.
Yeah. Well, you've been in the business too long. Yeah. So when you did appear with the WCW, was that just I don't know, what kind of a contract did you have with them?
Well, when I did, that was way before that. That was years before that. I did a little run where, Kevin Sullivan goes, for the first Monday Nitro, he goes, how much would it cost to get you in on our first Monday Nitro? He goes, it's against the fence, it's a big deal, and guy I picked to be number one over everybody. And I go, I can't do it, I gotta be in Japan. He goes, how much for the second one? I said, you don't have to pay anything, Kevin, just put me over. He goes, we gotta pay you something. And I said, okay, $500, which was, I should never said that. He goes, okay, you got it. So I wrestled, they liked me, and then they offered me a contract that was for $500, $500 a night. And they go, for one pay-per-view on Monday a month, you only work twice a month. You can't work for nobody else. No indies, no TV, no nothing. And I go, for $1,000 a month, they go, yeah, that's what you wanted. $500 a match, you got what you wanted. I go, no, that's what I said to look at me. Not, they would negotiate. I mean, how stupid is that? And they didn't offer me no more. They said, well, take it or leave it. That's what, later. Well, then later on, they called me again. And then that's when I talked to Kevin, and then that was different, you know, and Bischoff wasn't in charge no more, and Kevin and JJ was, you know. Anyways, that was that. They offered me a 500 match, and they thought that was okay. That was gonna, and didn't offer me no more. That was take it or leave it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things that people don't realize. The timing. It just seemed like it was off several times for you, where you should have. I mean, you talked to other wrestlers. I mean, you were as big as the biggest stars around then. And that to think that that's how things laid out, whether, you know, you're going to get a big contract and then something else happens and then somebody else is threatening to sue and they back off. Did it seem kind of like that's just the way it seemed to go for you?
Yeah. No, I'm not meant to hit the big one. So. I almost hit the big one, but I didn't quite get there.
Oh, you're talking with WCW, that one?
Fucking everywhere, you know. If I wouldn't have quit WCW, maybe it wouldn't have went out of business, and that would have been the big one. If I would have signed that contract instead of trying to call my mom, maybe that would have been the big one.
Yeah.
Or if I would have went to the events with the ECW and shit, maybe that could have been the big one, but none of them was, but they almost was.
Yeah, well, when, you know, WWF acquired, or WWE, I should say, acquired ECW, and you were part of that in, what, 97? Did you think, okay, maybe this is it? This is, I'm going to be part of this, and you know, come in and.
Yeah, and it was it. It was it for Paul Lee. Paul Lee signed, had a secret deal just for him and Vince, and didn't give a fuck about us.
Yeah. So,
I mean, he had a deal and getting paid, and we're starving. He goes, I can't even buy a pair of socks. I said, yes, you can. Your mom and dad are rich. He goes, I can't buy a pair of socks with my own money. I said, well, that's by your choice, because your mom and dad was you. You don't have to buy a pair of socks. They'll buy it. So yeah, you ain't bought a pair of socks. I believe it. Your mom buys them. I buy my socks. Some of the socks for my mom. You know, she don't buy them for me. I buy them for her.
So what was that experience like with when you were there, when they were doing, when they were using, you know, the ECW?
It was cool. The second time around, because Vince knew me from before,
right.
And he shook my hand like shook my arm off my shoulder, and I had a bad neck, so I went, I sold it, and he laughed. He said I was kidding him. I go, I was saying, like, this guy's an idiot. No, not an idiot. I didn't say that. This guy's a retard. Yeah. He's not no idiot, but he's a retard. He's goofy a little bit. But anyways, it was cool. He acted like he liked us and all that stuff, but we had absolutely no positive ratings or no more ratings that they didn't already have. They didn't go up. They weren't impressed with that.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not my choice. It's because I don't know why. It's not my choice anyway. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, that was, you know.
I didn't question anything. I never question shit. I just say, what's next?
Yeah. Well, when
I'll
that.
Really fix it.
Yeah, when you it never seemed like they really knew what to do with it. And it was, I mean, they had, you know, some really talented individuals that were a part of that. It just didn't seem like they ever really knew what to do with it when they had it.
Yeah. Like in Detroit, they had me wrestle there, and Vince will go, well, someone will do a job? I go, no. Like, why would I want to do a job? I thought you like me. He goes, well, you know, just to see how vulnerable you are, or how workable you are, you know, cooperative you are. And he didn't say that to me directly, he said it to Paul. And Paul goes, no, you can't beat him. You know, he's our biggest name. So he wanted me to do a job just to see how cooperative I would be.
Yeah.
I mean, we're invading there, and I'm like the top guy, sort of. Close to it, and he wanted to beat us, you know. And that was still in the time where you can't come in and beat the WWF, you know. They have to go around all the matches, so we had to bring our own guys in and wrestle them. I wrestled Scorpio, but he was considered one of our guys. And Taz wrestled Mikey Whipwreck. We had to wrestle our own guys. We couldn't wrestle their guys because we'd have to lose to them, which would be why we're not going to invade it and then get our shit kicked out of us.
Yeah. Well, I mean. Sabu, you know, I wish you would have become, those contracts would have come your way, because you certainly paid your dues, and man, did you entertain people. Sabu, you really, I tell you, I watched several matches. I went back leading up to our conversation, and I have to tell you, man, it's just incredible what you have done in the ring. You know, you were so far ahead of your time on a lot of these, and now you see a lot of these kids today emulating it. But I don't know if you think of it that way, that you did, you know, blaze a trail in professional wrestling that's being honored today.
Yeah, you know, when I see someone break a table and I like it, I go, yeah, right on. It wasn't for me, they wouldn't be breaking chairs. But usually I watch people break tables and I go, man, that's terrible. I like it because I'm glad they did it terribly, because mine's better. But when someone does one as good as mine or better, I appreciate that too, you know.
But do you see, when you look at what they're doing today, does it, some of it frighten you because the way they're pushing it? You got guys coming off balconies and. Does any of that?
The thing is, see, I always said jumping off a balcony is too far from wrestling. It's too far from the ring.
Yeah.
Jumping off the back of a truck or the building, you can't do that in wrestling because it's not by the ring.
Yeah.
So I broke a table because it was ringside furniture.
Yeah.
I threw a chair because the chair is all around the arena.
Yeah.
I hit him with a bell because the bell was next to the table. On the table. I didn't originally pull a table out under the ring. I hated that. I only used the table because it was the ringside timekeeper and an own table. I used it because it was there. I didn't use it because I go, hey, I'm going to use a table. If I was in the thick of something, I'd hit him with a goddamn hammer.
Yeah.
I'd use a table. Right. But I'm using a table because it was there, you know?
Right. But does what some of they're doing, the dangerous part of it, does it concern you at all?
Yeah. No, it don't concern me. Someone will get killed, and it won't be my fault, because I didn't jump off the building.
Right.
Like, even like Shane McMahon's doing, he's killing it.
Yeah.
Killing the business by jumping off the sky, you know, jumping out of the sky and could make crash pad or whatever he's doing. You know, that's too far from the realm of wrestling. Hmm. If a guy was going to climb up that thing and jump on me, for sure I had time to move. If I was knocked out and woke up an hour later, I had time to move.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
You know, that's too far from the realm of wrestling. So, no, that don't impress me. So if he kills himself, I say, ha-ha. But if I see a guy kill himself in the ring, I go, oh, man, poor dude. What a hero, all that. I see someone jump off a skyscraper or a building, whatever, and they break their ass. That's too bad. Hmm. Like, Combat Zone, they do a thing off the back of a building with a truck full of light bulbs. After they start the match in the ring, they wrestle in the ring and end up on the roof of the building jumping in a truck full of light bulbs. How convenient.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And how far from the realm of wrestling can you get?
Yeah. And what do you think about what's going on now with, you know, AEW and NXT? And is this all good for the business? What do you think of all this now?
NXT. What's NXT?
Well, the WWE, and now you've got AEW with Cody.
Yeah, you're right. I think that it's great that A&E is starting up, but are they as good as WWE? Hell no, but, you know, but people think so.
Yeah.
They'll find out, I guess.
Awesome.
But they're offering, you know, a lot of top dollar, and so that's great that we have someone else offering top dollar besides them.
Yeah, and it's creating more opportunities for a lot of these guys too.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. That sense.
Yeah. Most definitely. So I'm glad they're doing what they're doing. But they're saying, like, I watched the show and they're saying, we got the best wrestlers in the world. No, they don't. But that's okay. That if they can fool the people, good. But they don't have the best wrestlers in the world.
Yeah.
You know, part of being a good wrestler is an over. You know, not just good technically. But anyways, I'm glad what they're doing. You know, sweet.
Yeah. It's just helping professional wrestling. All right, folks, so don't miss your chance to get Sabu's book, Scars, Silence, and Super Glue. And you can go to the website, ecwsabu.com, and you can get a signed copy through that. Or, as Sabu mentioned, you can get it on Kindle. You can do it right online. So that works as well, right?
Yes, I prefer it because I don't have to send it to you. But if you want it autographed, you'd have to get it from me on the website.
All right. Well, I know you're still out there performing. I hope I run into you down the road sometime. But, Sabu, I'm so glad that we finally caught up with each other. And thanks for coming on Primetime.
Right on. I appreciate it. Thank you.